And welcome back once again, Parish of the Patriots, episode number 335. It will no doubt be a show to remember. At least that's always my hope going into. Maybe so, maybe not. But either way, I'm glad you're here. We're going to do our best to have a show to remember. So buckle up. A lot of fun, a lot of great discussion. If you are new, I hope you'll listen to the whole show. We do have a Christian-specific segment. That's roughly a halfway mark of the show. I hope you'll give it a try, at least once. If not, hey, I put it separate so you don't have to. But it probably won't be like what you're used to. If you do get something out of the show, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. We've got snail mail. That's it. Now, obviously, there's nothing here behind a paywall. If you're thinking the show sucks and I want better content, where do I pay to get it? I'm sorry, I've got nothing. This is as good as it gets. You get the show for free, regardless. It's up to you. If you get something out of it and you're moved to do so, you can drop something in an envelope. The crypto addresses, I've said this before, I'll say it again, because I go assuming, and after a while I get an email, well, I want to send something to this Bitcoin address. I don't have any access to that. Those are Sven's from before he went away. You know, if you sent something there, it hasn't disappeared, but you know, eventually when he's off parole, I'm assuming he'll be able to access those. I don't have any of that. I don't want it. Don't have it. I got snail mail. That's it. Address the envelope. Put something in. If you don't put something in, you're still going to get the show. You're not paying for the show. You get that for free regardless. But if you get something out of it and want to drop a little gift in there for me, I do appreciate it. And it is, if nothing else, very uplifting. Email address is down there as well. If for whatever reason, I don't know. But it's there. Because we have to have some sort of point of contact for the network. You know, because Sven had another old point of contact, and that doesn't obviously work anymore. So has to be some sort of point of contact. With the listener supporter mailbag, and I do have actually three here. The other one of these is going to get put off. I'll do it in the Christian specific segment because it is of that nature. It's going to be good stuff, I'm sure. But we'll get the other two we got right here. Tony, I wanted to let you know I got it. There's no note here, but I always, the other purpose of the listener supporter mailbag is so that, you know, you do know this stuff arrives. And as sketchy as the postal system can be, I've had pretty good luck overall with everything arriving. So, yeah, thank you, Tony. And then from Peter. GPD, a little something for your piggy bank. The subject of universal basic income, or UBI, comes up now and again. While I think it has some benefits and would probably be doable if the government didn't waste much money on other things, I'm unsure if it's a good idea overall. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts. And again, all the best. That's from Peter. Thank you. Thank you, Peter. See, I like it. I like to know that you're, because I don't sit around and think, I can't think of everything. You know, UBI, Universal Basic Income, a pipe dream, but they float it out once in a while. It's kind of like how Trump, you know, when they were doing the Doge thing, which has already disappeared for the most part, and they were talking about we save so much money, we could give every person in the United States a check for $5,000. That's get everybody hyped up and be like, yeah, where's my check? I ain't seen no check. Have y'all seen? Yeah, you ain't getting no check. See, that gets you excited. They're going to save all this money. Doge is saving so much money, you're going to get a check. Universal UBI is basically that. It's exactly like the student loan thing. You know, they're going to wipe out everybody's student loan any day now. Uh-huh. UBI is the Doge check for the left, basically for the run-of-the-mill leftists. I'm not talking about the big leftists. They're already getting UBI because they get the billionaires. They're getting all the tax breaks and everything else. It's just a little something. That's the Doge check. They throw these UBI stories out there every so often to get people thinking, yeah, I'm going to get a minimum income from the government. I can just for existing. For existing, I'm going to get a check. No, you're not. And if you did, it would be limited time only. They're always going to be streamed. Nobody's going to pay you for nothing. I think it's a terrifying idea for the simple fact. Now hear me out here. Nobody's going to pay you to do nothing. And so, if you got a UBI, there's going to be something expected in return. They're not going to say it up front. Like, if they were to pass it, they're going to tell you, oh, yeah, we're just going to pay you because y'all are so special. You can't see the facial expressions. Sometimes I just think it'd be fun to do videos so y'all could see the various facial expressions I make. But you can imagine. Use your imagination. Y'all are so special, and we, the government, love you so much. We're going to give you money to live off of just because you're so special. They're going to expect something. Now, yeah, I do think there should be some, you know, like for here, for instance, here in the U.S., we have Social Security for the old people. You know, because, you know, old people shouldn't just be left to starve to death, because especially under, you know, as the system itself economically continues to degrade, you know, you got people, we're just going to have old people starve to death when they can't work anymore, because nobody, back in the day, you know, people could go work for a company, and when they retired, they had a pension, so they could live off of that pension. Well, if you had that today, yeah, you wouldn't need something like Social Security. But we don't have that today. And most people are living check to check. Then they get too old to work. They can't work. And they at least need to buy food. It's a form of universal basic income. And it's not enough. I mean, if you know people that are living off of Social Security, I mean, it's laughable. You know, I mean, they might come buy food. That's, you know, they sitting there sweating in the heat because they can't afford to run the air conditioner. So we, in a way, we have it for like old people. And I'm not against it. You know, you have people be like, hey, it's socialism. The old people can starve. Anyway, no, they don't. They, there would be so many strings attached to that. And it isn't going to happen anyway. It's something I don't spend a lot of time, because they're not going to do that. Like I say, it's just like when they were coming out talking about we could give everybody a $5,000 check for what we're saving with Doge. And you had conservative, you have right wing, whatever, people running around getting all excited like they were going to see that check any day now. And I'm just like laughing, because you ain't going to see no damn check. I don't even pay no attention, because I know it ain't going to happen. This, look at her. There's so much going on. There's just so much going on. You know, they're building now. They're really setting us up. This push for... I'm going to combine two things here. This push, first off, this push for biometrics. And it's real. That's not a theory. They're pushing biometrics. You notice now that you get prompts on your computer. Hey, sign in a lot easier. Use your facial recognition or a fingerprint. Biometrics. It's going to be convenient. Just pay with your face. They got that in some countries already. You buy something, you just walk up and stick your face in the screen. Blip, pays for your stuff. How convenient. I don't want to do all that. I don't know. You know, they pushing the biometrics, and then you got the whole thing with Palantir and massive data collection. When Trump come out and talk about we're going to have Palantir do all this, that, or the other, that means they're already doing it. You know, just a few short years ago, when they basically started introducing the public to the idea of artificial intelligence, to AI. That means they'd already been doing it for however long. Now it's time to start getting people comfortable with the idea. Now they're going around building all these giant data centers. I've been seeing these stories. And they're building all these giant data centers. And as always, they're real vague about what they're for. You know? We're building this giant data center that's going to use a kajillion, you know, 6 million gigawatts or whatever of electricity to run. What's it for? Well, it's going to power AI. Whatever the hell that means. That's so you're supposed to think that when you ask one of these stupid low-tier AI chatbots that they let you, the plebs, have access to, you're thinking that's why they have to have a giant data center, so that you can ask ChatGPT what's the best way to make potato salad. Come on now. That ain't what it's for. my guess, and it's just a guess because I don't know, they lie to us about everything, is just to power all of the data collection they're doing when you put your face in the scanner and they can tie you to everything you ever said. When they're collecting your biographical profile to decide if you're going to be a troublemaker someday in the future. That's what they need those data sets. They need for powering AI. Power AI. That's what they, yeah, when you ask one of these AI chatbots. It's for that. It's for you. No, it's not. It's for them. It's always for them. But thinking about this stuff. All of this data collection that they're doing. That's not a theory. They're obviously doing it. The Palantir's of the biometrics. The biometrics thing really creeps me out. I don't know. You know, and you know, hey, maybe I've already fallen for it because, you know, my phone, I have to unlock the screen with a fingerprint. And it doesn't work half the time because I guess I'm getting old. And I've worked with my hands. I don't hardly have fingerprints. Half the time, damn thing doesn't work. But this whole biometrics thing creeps me out. You know, if you want to get on your computer, you want to do anything, you got they're trying to move us to where you got to scan your face. You can buy your groceries scanning your face. Fingerprints, this, that, the other. They've already pushed it. You got to get that real ID now. You know, you go to renew your driver's license. They do this. You got to take your birth certificate. They take your picture, they do your thumbprints. It's all part of the real ID. They're already putting us all into the biometric database. And you got no choice. You got to have a driver's license.
Yeah.
And so you get this feeling it's going to come to a point where they officially walk into Mark of the Beast territory and you're going to have to say no, even though it's going to make life really difficult. You know, that's where it feels like it's going, doesn't it? Got people all paranoid and stuff. But you see, being the eternal optimist, okay, a little tongue-in-cheek there. But seriously, looking at it from the other way, what does it say about these people that they are that paranoid about the people they rule over? You know? I mean, what does that say? They're so worried. They do all this nonsense. They play all this global theater. We have wars on drugs and wars on terrors and this evil regime on the other side of the planet's going to threaten your freedom and all of this other bullshit that they feed the masses. Yet the evidence shows that what they're really afraid of are the people themselves. You don't build massive data collection centers, push everyone into biometrics, and you want to know how many times a day they take a shit. Because, you know, you're doing a good job. What does this say about a system to where they fear the people they rule over? How is it this day? It is hard for people like us to grasp. No, and by people like us, I mean normal people. How is it this freaking hard to just not be evil? You know, I mean, really. Look, I don't even care that there's rich, powerful people. You know, look, there's always going to be people that got more money. I don't care about all that. All they got to do is leave us alone and quit. I try to keep my colorful language to a minimum. It's hard to believe sometimes. But I mean, really, all anybody really wants among the people that they're obviously so afraid of and so paranoid about. Look, all they got to do is just leave us alone. Quit jacking with us. You know? Throw us some crumbs. I don't care if you're a billionaire. Look, just throw us some crumbs to where we can make a decent living. I don't care that you can buy your private jets and fly around the country and, you know, screw 14-year-old girls. I really don't even care. That kind of stuff has always gone on. Just leave us alone. Quit jacking with us. You know? Is it really necessary to squeeze us for every last penny when you already have more money than you, your children, your grandchildren, great-great-grandchildren will ever be able to spend? Is it really going to kill you to let everybody else, I don't know, have a decent house, be able to buy groceries, hope that their kids might have a better life than they did? Is it really too much to ask? Is it really that damn hard to not be evil? And for the answer is apparently yes. For them, it's impossible. Do I always say you can't understand any of this unless you understand the spiritual element of it? Just strictly from a logical sense, if I was these people, I would be keeping the masses as happy as possible and profiting all the way. It's not that hard. And they just can't help it. And so they run around doing massive data collection, massive censorship, massive this, massive this. They're paranoid. They're not worried about the terrorists. That's a joke. Look at how many times they've rebranded Al-Qaeda. Is Al-Qaeda the good guys or the bad guys now? I can't keep up. Hell, are they even Al-Qaeda or did they just rename them into something else? It's obvious from their actions. The group of people they're most paranoid about are you and me, the people they rule over. Why? Well, we don't ask for much. We just won't be left alone. You know, let us have a decent car, a decent house to live in. You know, maybe some food that isn't full of poison. Maybe that's a little much to ask for. And they just can't help it. They just literally can't help it. What does it say? When your ruling class fears the people. How sustainable is that? Does this come across as strength to you? You know, because I get wore out with people that act like no matter what, we're always going to lose and they're always going to win. And you know, there's no sense in even... Look, this isn't a position of strength. When you're running around being that paranoid about the people you're ruling over, when you're going out and building bunkers... Building bunkers. What do you need a bunker for? To hide from the people. Why are you that worried about it? Well, how is it that damn hard to just, you know, if you're not an evil asshole, the people aren't going to want to, you know, string you up. They don't care if you, people are used to that. Look, all the way going back to the days of kings. The king was, of course, the king was wealthy. You might be a peasant out there digging in the dirt to grow a potato. You really resent the fact that the king had pretty women around him and a lot of money. He's the king. People, by and large, understand there's going to be those who have wealth and power. That's just the way the world works. I don't care. But let the peasant grow his damn potato and leave him the hell alone. The only time you had peasant uprisings against the king... You know, that were organic and not organized by outside revolutionaries, was when officials, you know, things got so oppressive and out of hand, they just had enough. They wouldn't leave them alone, wouldn't even let them grow the damn potato. Then you wound up with peasant uprisings. Obviously, these people today are terrified of a peasant uprising. They're building bunkers, for goodness sake. They're trying to build a technical, I don't know, biometric profile making control grid because they're so damn scared of the people they rule over. They tacitly admit that they have no legitimacy. You know? And all they got to do is not be evil. Let people have a little something. Give them a little hope. Something. They can't do it. They just can't help themselves. And as a result, they run around being paid. Look, if somebody's wanting to build a biometric, building massive data centers to keep a profile on every single person in the country because they're so paranoid that the peasants are going to get mad one of these days and string them up before they can get to their bunker, you may be doing something wrong. And this is not a system that's sustainable. It's not. This isn't going to go on. You know, when the crisis in legitimacy is this bad, it's not going to go on. It's not. It's done for. It's just a matter of time. So I find it funny when I see people or hear people and they're still blathering on about how we're going to save America. I read an article and somebody is like, you know, time could be running out of when we could turn this thing around and save America. It's like, bruh, you're way late on that. That time is long gone. This shit show is going to end. You're not going to quote unquote save America. I don't even know why you would want to. I'm looking forward to something better. Because if you just look forward to doom and gloom, if your mindset is, yeah, this whole America is going to come apart. The whole Western liberal global order is going to fall apart. And then it's going to just be hell on earth. So you're saying, if at some point it collapses and these people who obviously and observably cannot help but be evil lose their grasp of control over ruling over you, then it's going to be a disaster? How does that make any sense? You know? It all collapses. Then it's going to be, maybe it'll be better. We don't know. I don't give a shit about America falling apart. I'm hoping for secession. I'm hoping before things get really, really bad, it just gets to the point where maybe sections of the U.S. say, you know what? We're done with the union thing. Abraham Lincoln been dead a long time. Piss on him. We're going our own way. That's what I'm hoping for. And then we can start over again. Anyway, I don't want to get into a bunch of hypotheticals. Yes, but if we do not then establish, get away from me with that shit. It's going to come to an end, and then you get a chance anyway. We might blow the chance. Goodness sakes, people have blown the chance many times before. Yeah, you're right. We might blow the chance. But it's a chance. Anybody running around talking about what? We're going to save America and turn it around? You ain't zero chance of that shit. I guarantee you. If you look, once you understand how the system works, why it works, and that it's not malfunctioning, it's working as planned, then you understand. You're not saving America. It's done. Toast. Quit agonizing over about it. I don't give a shit. You know, I'm just going to go on and live my life and do the best I can because there's nothing I can do about it. And honestly, if I could flip a switch and save this current system, I'm not doing it because it's evil and I won't abide by it. There's so much, so many layers, so many tiers of wickedness and evil. I'm not going to try. I wouldn't lift a finger to save this shitty system. Maybe we're going to turn America around. We could run out of time to save America. Man, do I got news for you, bruh. When your ruling elite are so scared and paranoid and fearful of the people they rule over, they have no legitimacy and they know it, and they're admitting it. They're for all intents and purposes, every story you read about Palantir, massive data centers and biometrics and basically a techno control grid dystopia. Look, every one of those stories they put out, they are admitting to you that they're illegitimate, they have no right to rule over you, and they know it. If you don't know it, that's on you. You know, I don't know what to tell you. I know y'all all know it, but you know what I'm saying. I'm just speaking out into the void of humanity, I guess, the ocean of humanity. That if they're too stupid to figure that out when they're openly admitting they have no legitimacy, and you're talking about, we got to save these people somehow. Why would you want to save the system that is ruled, that is run by people who hate your guts? I don't understand that. I get that people are afraid of change. I get that. That's human nature. But it's going to come about. I mean, you just look, there's no turning around the trajectory. I'm having fun. Well, I'm not having fun. That would be kind of sadistic. I'm having a chuckle. Every time I read an article from somebody that back before the election, they were talking about they were going to vote for Trump because he was our best chance of saving America and things might actually change. And now I'm reading these same people and they're shocked that Lucy pulled the football away again. And I'm just like, What do you expect? I mean, I don't know, you know? I mean, you're surprised? You admit that the 2020 election was a fraud, and it obviously was a massive fraud. That's, yeah, I mean, it's something you're supposed to be afraid to say, but it's the truth. And these people say that, but then the 2024 election, Trump miraculously got in there despite the obvious ability to just have a complete fake election like they did in 2020. But they somehow didn't do that. And Trump won because we the people. And now they're shocked when this Trump presidency isn't going anything like what they expected. I don't know, man. You know, what the hell? People legitimately rule. You know, and people make mistakes. Rulers are not infallible. Kings are not infallible. But people who rule legitimately, you know, they wouldn't feel the need to have a profile of every single American because, you know, any minute they may bring out pitchforks and torches. Well, I mean, you know, and it's just, I don't know. It's so amazing to me because all they have to do is not be a bunch of evil assholes. That's all they got to do. No one cares that they're rich. No one cares that they're powerful. Just quit. Just let the peasant grow a potato, for goodness sakes. You know, do you, you got a gajillion dollars in the bank. Do you really need to milk them for that last $5 to put in your pocket? Why not throw something their way? They just can't help it. Anyway, let's get into the Christian specific segment. It'll be more interesting. No, it's fun. It's a fun discussion. It says so much about the system we live in. And again, I see people going on about we got to save it. Why do you want to? I'm sitting back and watching it burn. I'm not trying to save shit. Israel's going to be left on their own to figure out how to hold their little colony in the Middle East. That's going to be their problem when this thing comes apart. You know, biometric control grid or not, data centers with profiles on every single person or not, that isn't going to save the system from coming apart. Just not. You can have all the profiles you want, but when things get bad enough, people will just massively not comply to all of your ridiculous rules. And you can sit there, you know, you can't put the entirety of the country in a prison. They're trying to make the country into like a biometric prison or something where everybody's scared to step out of line. I wouldn't be laying odds on that being successful. What you're going to wind up is people just shrug. It just becomes too much. And people quit trying to go along. They just finally at some point they just say it. That's enough. I'm just going to do my own thing. You can sit there and screech at me about you taking away my credit points or whatever the hell I'm going on. You wind up with mass compliance. The thing's going to fall apart. They're not nearly as clever as they think they are. Why would you want to save it? I don't understand that. We've got to save the system that keeps its boot on our neck and is projecting that they want to stomp harder. All of these things are putting into, they're not trying to build this infrastructure because, you know, they want to make our lives easier. They're telling you, we got to get to a point where we can really clamp down and stomp on your face. And we got to save the system. What? Why would you do that? Anyway, let's get into the Christian-specific segment. If I wasn't a little bit lazy, I would go back and edit all that tongue-tiedness out. But it adds character. It adds patina to the show. I'll leave it in. You know what to do. Get in there. Let's fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon, The Parish of the Patriots. Now, before we get wading off into this week's Christian-specific segment, I want to return once again to the listener-supporter mailbag. GPD, I see in the Bible about restoring Israel, but I don't think it means that country in the Middle East. Can you elaborate? That's from Triangle Whip. And it's a good question. This falls in line with a lot of this really gross misconception that among the MCC and specifically the evangelical sect about this obsession with the modern nation state of Israel. Short answer, you're right. No, it doesn't have anything to do with this this current country that's using this name. Now, excuse me. There's no, the question here doesn't involve a specific Bible verse. But if you were to look in, and I'm not going to read through this whole thing, but you can look in the book of Jeremiah, chapter 30 through, say, 38. Obviously, there's a lot to read there, and we're not going to do it. But, you know, there's a lot of this stuff about restoring Israel. When it comes to the Bible, always remember, it has to be read in the entire context. Now, mockers, scoffers, non-believers will sit there and say, well, that's just because you're cherry-picking, which is projection. That's what they always do. The unbelievers who mock and ridicule the faith, they always cherry pick a verse and then try to hammer you over the head with it. You know, well, no, this is what it says. And when you start trying to explain the context, oh, now you're just trying to change the meaning of what it says. Now, if you applied this to any other book, and yes, we are going to get back to addressing this specifically, but if you were to do this with any other book, I mean, if you took the Communist Manifesto, if you took Karl Marx's writings or Hitler's Mein Kampf, and you read one paragraph or a few lines, just a couple of sentences out of these writings and said, there it is. This sums up everything in the book. This is what the author meant. Well, you'd look at the size of the book and you'd say, well, that's silly. How can you've got to read the whole book to understand the context of that line. That just makes, if you did that, my point being, if you try to apply this faulty reasoning to any other book, people would dismiss it right away. And yet unbelievers in their attack on the faith will do this constantly. They'll read one or two lines out of the book, out of the Bible, and say, no, this is what the Bible says. And if it's true, then this is what it means. And when you try to point out, no, it has to be understood in the entire context of this ginormous collection of books, which is what it really is. You know, to understand one line, you can't take one line and say, that's what the book is saying, or that one line means this. And yet they do this all the time. You don't want to fall for that. You have to understand the entire thing in the context of the whole. There, that sounds good. The context of the whole. That isn't a cop-out. It's common sense. To look at something as voluminous as this and to read a couple lines and say, well, there you go. Now defend it. And of course, again, it's a fool's errand, because the minute you try to defend it, with context, they start hand-waving around and saying, oh, see, now you're trying to change what it says. That's not what the two lines I just quoted you say. Okay, anyway, back to the question. Yes, no, it doesn't have anything to do with modern nation state of Israel. Now, Jeremiah chapters 30 through roughly 38, you get a whole long thing from the prophet about restoring Israel, restoring Jacob. But I am going to, and like I say, obviously we could sit here, I could take the whole hour just reading that. We're not going to do that. But in the middle of all of that, let's look at just to kind of make the point here. We're going to look at chapter 31, and we're going to do a few verses and say it explains. We're going to do these few verses to understand, again, context. Because you read 30 through 30, and there's a lot here about restoring Israel and restoring the fortunes of Jacob. And people read that and they said, well, there we go. There we go. See, God is going to save the modern nation state of Israel. Like I say, I want to focus on chapter 31, verses 27 through 34, kind of smack in the middle of all of this to understand the context. Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will sow the house of Israel and the house of Judah with the seed of man and with the seed of beast. And it shall come to pass that like as I have watched over them to pluck up and to break down and to throw down and to destroy and to afflict, so will I watch over them to build and to plant, saith the Lord. In those days they shall say no more, the fathers have eaten a sour grape, and the children's teeth are set on edge. But every one shall die for his own iniquity. Every man that eateth the sour grape, his teeth shall be set on edge. Now, he's talking, I'm going to stop here, and we'll read on in a minute. He's talking about justice. He's talking about, instead of, you know, he's speaking into the future of a time of God's justice. Behold, the days will come, saith the Lord, that I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. And I want to stop right there because that is a key verse. Let's say it again. Behold, the days will come, saith the Lord, that I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. I don't think anyone argues what that new covenant is. We know what the new covenant is. It's spelled out clearly in the latter parts of the Bible. It's the center part of our faith. And he says here, with Israel and with Judah. Now, I want to stop. We're going to spend a few minutes on this. The Lord says he's going to make a new covenant with Israel and with Judah. What is a covenant? It is an agreement. It is an official agreement. Think of it as a contract. If you have a new contract, you can't have two contracts in effect on the same, with the same people, for the same meaning, for the same topic at once. So if you write up a new contract, if you make a new agreement, that means the old agreement has been dissolved. I mean, use your common sense. Think of it from your perspective. You're in business. You make a contract and an agreement with somebody. Let's use a simple, because marriage today is defined as, is basically defined as a legal agreement before the state. It has really nothing to do with biblical marriage aside from the name. It's very reflective of this modern nation state of Israel as well. The modern marriage and marriage in this society, the world we live in today, is abided by the state, not by God. So when you get married, you file for permission from the government. You license yourself with the government, and you were married before. It is a legal binding agreement. Try to get divorced. If you don't think it's a legal binding agreement, try to get divorced. You're going to find out that it's a legal binding agreement. It's a contract, as it were. It's the most poorly written, vaguely written, no terms in it contract, which is why it works, turns out so badly for so many people. But it is a contract. Now, if you get, quote unquote, married to a woman in this society today, you go and file the correct paperwork and you're married according to the state. Now, you meet you a different woman and you want to go marry her. You want a new agreement, a new marriage contract with this this pretty barmaid named Kay. You meet the barmaid named Kay and you want to sign in. You want to get married to her. You want to sign a new agreement, a new covenant, a new contract with Kay. Well, guess what? You cannot do that until you dissolve the first agreement, the first contract with your current or previous, whatever you want to say it, wife. You to make a new covenant, you got to get rid of the old agreement. You got to get rid of the old contract. You can't have two conflicting contracts in force at once. And yet, how many times have we all had to suffer listening to these morons chasing heresy sit here and say, we got to give all our money and support this modern nation state of Israel because in Genesis, God told, because it says in the Bible that God will bless Israel, and anyone who blesses Israel, God will bless. The Bible says they're God's chosen. If you can't have two... Oh, I could just wade off into this. Every time I get into this, because then you want to start getting into, are these even the same people? And but just without wading into that, again, and I know I've said this before, but these things bear repeating. You can't have two contracts. This is why I get worked up. When you have people who claim to be Christian believers and they start this nonsense about God can't change his mind, so the old covenant with Israel is in effect. That's why we gotta put their demon flag on the side of our church and signs up saying to pray for them, because then God will bless us. You they testify against their own supposed faith. If you believe in the new covenant through Jesus Christ, you either believe in that or you don't. If you do, then the old has got, it is written in the New Testament, the new has come, the old has passed away. It's dissolved. I did an entire show sometime back. Please don't ask me which show it is, because I don't feel like trying to go back and figure it out, because it's a long time ago. But we talked about looking at the entire process of the crucifixion as a legal proceeding to dissolve the old covenant officially, the old contract. You cannot have two conflicting contracts in place at one time. If you're going to have a new contract, a new covenant, you first got to divorce the old one. That's just how it is. No, God can't change his mind. These people. And I do. Look, I try to be patient, and I struggle with this. You know, I keep thinking, you know, those of us whose faith is a little stronger has got to bear with those whose faith's a little weaker. I keep telling myself, you know, they're referred to as sheep in the Bible. So being familiar with sheep behavior, it's to be expected. But I ain't going to lie. This stuff makes me want to tear my hair out. Because when these people go around ignorantly talking about God can't change his mind, his agreement with Israel in Genesis, of course, Israel didn't exist at the point that chapter they like to read. Jacob becomes Israel. Jacob hadn't even been born yet. They're renouncing their own faith. They're testifying against. They're basically saying Jesus Christ is a footnote. What matters is, I don't know. Do you see what I'm saying? Okay, I wandered off here. I got rolling here. Okay, behold, the days will come, saith the Lord, that I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. We know there's a new covenant. And he says with Israel and Judah. This should give us a pretty good clue of some context here. Not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day that I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, which my covenant they break, although I was an husband unto them, saith the Lord. So it's not like the old covenant. If you're familiar with the New Testament, you understand how this makes sense. Not like the old covenant, but like the new. It's a new covenant, not like the old one. But this shall be the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. After those days, saith the Lord, I will put my law in their inward parts and write it in their hearts, and will be their God, and they shall be my people. And they shall teach no more every man his neighbor, and every man his brother, saying, Know the Lord, for they shall all know me, from the least of them unto the greatest of them, saith the Lord. For I will forgive their iniquity, and I will remember their sin no more. Now, this Christian-specific segment is geared towards people who are already believers, which is not geared towards people who have no clue, because I just can't start from basic. So I have to assume that pretty much every one of you listening is a believer and you have some grasp of the Bible. So if you grasp the New Testament, and I'm not talking down or being patronizing, don't take it that way. What I'm saying is I believe in y'all. I believe you're familiar at least with the New Testament, because every Christian should at least be familiar with the New Testament. What we just read here should tie everything up. Does it not? He's talking about Israel and Judah, this new covenant. We know the new covenant. I mean, if you understand the entirety of this whole collection of books, we all know what the new covenant is. Our entire faith is based around the new covenant. If you're a Christian believer and you're going to deny the new covenant, then you have denied the faith in Christ. You cannot believe that we're saved through Jesus Christ without believing there is a new agreement to bring that about. There is a new contract. There is a new covenant. And here we go to the Old Testament, where the prophet says the old covenant is going to be done away with. When you read the New Testament, you understand that this was the doing away of the old covenant. We have a new covenant. It's talking about Israel and Judah. We have this new covenant. Makes sense, right? I assume it makes sense. It all comes together. That all just fits together nicely. I don't know. I'm amazed how people just, I don't know. I'll get it spit out here in a minute. I really sometimes think it is a mistake letting everyone have access to a Bible. I really do, because And it's not, I know that's just me speaking, but when I see people that just, I mean, they have no clue, and these people spout it off, and I'm not talking about non-believers here. I'm talking about self-professed Christians, self-professed believers, and they don't even have a basic grasp of the Bible, like, at all. I mean, look, I can't sit here if you say, well, you know, what does this book, chapter, this verse, this, I have no idea. I'm going to have to look it up. I mean, understanding the whole, you know, the message of the whole. And I see these people that are, again, self-professed Christians, and they vomit out a verse and swear up and down that this means the modern nation state of Israel, these modern quote unquote Jews are like the master race, and God wants us to serve them. And that's what the Bible says. I don't know. You know, if you're not going to read the whole thing, if you're going to be lax, look, if you're going to, this is a great question, Triangle Whip. I appreciate it. As you can see, because I've spent way more time on this because I got on a roll on it. But I mean, the faith is not something you can go at half-assed. You hear what I'm saying? Reading the Bible and understanding the Bible, the context of the Bible, I mean, it takes a lot of work. It's not, people have this TikTok / Twitter attention span. They want to read a tweet from the Bible and say, this is what God thinks. You got to understand the whole, but the Bible is very daunting. It's very thick. How am I supposed to go through all of this? Well, you spend your entire life doing it. Yes. I mean, it's great. Look, you got to put the work in. You mean, this is work. I know the MCC tries to convince everybody that all you got to say is you accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior and your work is done. Your work just starts. You got to understand the entirety of this thing as much as you can, and it's going to take your whole life, and you're still not going to get all of it. I don't get all of it, and I'm not going to get all of it my entire life. But I've got to spend my entire life trying to understand the fullness of all of this. You got to put the work in. And you have these, you wind up with these Christians. The MCC spends zero time on the Old Testament unless it's time to cherry pick a verse to claim that we got to support the modern nation state of Israel. And honestly, they cherry pick the New Testament. You know, well, hell, what's left? No, I mean, really, when you're cherry picking what you are and are not going to talk about, how often do you think any church you walk into today is going to talk about wives submitting to their husbands from the New Testament, or woman not even being allowed to speak in church. I guarantee you could just grab a list of random churches in your town, go in there on a Sunday, and you're not going to hear anything about a woman not speaking in church, not having authority over a man, and obeying her husband. You're not going to get that, because they can cherry pick that out because women don't like it, and we got to get along. They cherry pick the New Testament and ignore the Old Testament. And that's just how it is. I'm sorry. It is. So what I'm telling you is, what does that mean for you as a believer? That means you're going to have to do the work yourself. I mean, it does. You're going to have to do the work yourself. I'm not saying, I'm not telling people don't go to church or whatever. No. But as a believer, you're responsible for your own faith and your own encouragement and your own spiritual growth. I share, things I've come to understand and whatever insights God has blessed me with here, to share with all of you. But I'm telling you, I'm not responsible for your spiritual growth. I hope this helps whoever can help in any way it can. This is a part of, the work we do here in this world. But I'm not responsible for your spiritual growth. You are. Each one of us as believers is responsible for our own spiritual uplifting, our own spiritual growth. I cannot imagine surviving as a believer and just going off of what, some random preacher in some MCC church goes on about, while they cherry pick the New Testament, ignore the old, unless it's time for a fundraising drive for, the poor oppressed Israelis or something. There's just so much of it. You in the book of Romans, where Paul starts talking about, the grafted in branches and the natural branches being torn off. I see people who are Christian believers, or at least say they're Christian believers, and they will point to this to defend Jewish supremacy. If you went to one of these people and you said, I think white people are the supreme race, they would run backwards and they would say, you're a white supremacist? That's crazy. What is wrong with you? We're all children of God. And yet these same people will then basically turn around and promote Jewish supremacy, like it's just a totally normal thing to do. I know it's just, I've seen people point, these Christian believers point at Paul's going on about the grafted branches. And again, no understanding here. They think that means that Israel, the modern nation state, which because it's the same name, my gosh, it's got to be the Israel from the Bible. They're the supreme ones. See, we're just kind of lucky to get adopted in because we're just stepchildren that God kind of lets come around. Instead of looking at this as a warning not to make the same mistake that was made with the first covenant. With the first covenant, what did they do? God basically won their, gave them victory in their battles. They managed to come out of nothing and establish a nation. I'm talking biblical Israelites, not modern Israelis. Notice the difference. And what did they do? What did the actual Israelites do? Well, after a while, they just went off and did whatever the hell they wanted to in rebellion against God. Remember, all of God's promises were, if you do this, then I will do this. They didn't do their part. These people that argue for this nonsense basically make the claim that God should be a fool and just hold up his end of the bargain regardless of what the other party does. And ain't no one going to do that. God's nobody's fool. It was always, if you do this, well, they never did their part. They violated the contract at every turn. And then what happened? Enemy nations come out. And then what do? Oh, where's the Lord? The Lord has to intercede on our behalf and destroy or smite our enemies like he did in the old days. Why isn't God smiting our enemies? Well, I don't know. You spent the last 10 years burning your children alive because you think Baal's going to give you more money. Maybe that has something to do with it. Maybe the fact that you weren't holding up your end of the bargain. Maybe that's why God's not marching out before your armies and bringing you victory in battle anymore. You just... The whole grafted in branch, it's a warning. You know, if you fall for the same mistake, and this points, I think, to this notion promoted in the MCC that so many Christians have now, that Jesus Christ equals you can sin without consequence now. Just go on, pursue all the sin you want to. You've got a green light to sin because Jesus done took all that on himself. Now there's no consequences for your actions. You can just rock on, brother. Yeah, now you're saved. Go ahead. Just wallow in iniquity. Nothing's going to happen because Jesus, you said the word. So Jesus, God did not spare them under the first covenant that basically took on the same attitude. He's not going to spare you in the new covenant when you shit all over everything he's done. The ultimate holy sacrifice of Jesus Christ, his son for us. And you shit all over that by going off and wallowing in iniquity because now you can sin without consequence. You're pursuing sin to your heart's content. When what we just read in Jeremiah, what? He writes his heart, his laws on your heart. No, but for some reason, a lot of people don't have that and they want to go off and pursue sin. They just don't want the consequences of that. The whole thing, the grafted branch, it's essentially, it should be read as a warning. They didn't spare ancient Israel when they didn't hold up their end of the bargain. See what I'm saying? You got to, oh, we could keep going. There is always, you know, again, going back to the original covenant, it was always laid out, I will do this if you do this. And again, God is nobody's fool. It's an agreement. The Lord will do these things if you do these things. The new covenant's no different. It requires faith. Not a feeling. Faith is our deeds and our actions and our works. So if we walk in faith in Jesus Christ, actually put in the effort, put in the work to grow and fulfill God's purpose for man in the first place and do our part, then we don't have to worry. God's going to hold up his end of the bargain. I can promise you that. There's a lot of things I don't know, but I do know this. If you're doing what you're supposed to do, don't worry about what God's going to do. God holds up his end of the bargain. But you got to do your part. If the ancient Israelites did not do that, and so, you know, the contract ultimately wound up being null and void even after just exhaustive efforts on the part of the Lord to get the people to turn around and start holding up their end of the bargain, then that applies to the new covenant. We have got to hold up our end of the bargain if we expect God to do his part. It just makes sense, doesn't it? But to understand it in the whole, if you understand the old covenant and the way God operated under the old agreement, then yes, we have a new covenant, we have a new contract, we have a new agreement, and we have a pretty good idea of how that works. God will do these things, but we have to do there's no such thing as an agreement where one party doesn't have to do anything. Why have an agreement? Does that make any sense? Why would you sign a contract with somebody and your contract is basically there's no expectation from the other party? There's no need for a contract then. They can just go off and do whatever. You don't need a contract for that. They were already doing that. All you're doing is signing yourself up to babysit them, to be responsible for them, to take care of them. But they're free to go up. You know, going back to my comparison of marriage today as a contract before the state, which it is. It's a contract that is poorly written because no terms are set out, but it is a legally binding contract, which is proved by if you want to dissolve it, you got to go to a court, not the church, a court to have it dissolved. Now, while there are no specifics in the contract, it's taken as a given. You know, at a bare minimum, it's taken as a given. You marry some woman, and at a bare minimum, it's expected that she's not going to go out and have sex with other men. You know, that's a bare minimum. Even under these modern poor standards of marriage, it's a bare minimum that it's expected that she's not going to go out screwing other dudes. And yet, obviously, if she does so, what are you going to do? You're going to go to the court and dissolve the contract. She's not holding up her end of the bargain. You're going to take care of her and love her and cherish her and all that crap you say. You know, you try your best to be a good husband. At the bare minimum, you're expecting her not to go out and keep piling on her body count. And yet, if she does so, what are you going to do? You're going to dissolve the contract. You're going to put up with that. You know, there's some expectation here. Anyway, God's covenants are set up. He will do these things. There's requirements for us. Bare minimum requirements, what we got to do. That's just the way it's structured. Again, you don't need a contract. If you hook up with a gal for a one-night stand, there's no agreement that next weekend she ain't going to be laying up with another dude. There's no expectation of that because it's a one-night stand. You don't have an agreement with her. But if you get married and get that state contract, that license, as they call it, to get married, at a bare minimum, it's expected that she's not going to pile on her body count any further. And if she does so, what are you going to do? You're going to go dissolve the contract. Well, you broke your word. You went back on your word. You said you were going to love her and cherish her until death do you part. Yes, but she's piling on her body count after the agreement. She's not holding up her end of the bargain. Makes any man who would just continue to do his part while his wife is out there screwing every Tom, Dick, and Harry in town, everybody in town is going to say, that guy's an idiot. The hell? He's a cuck. Is there something wrong with this dude? Nope. Well, the Lord isn't an idiot. You think if you don't hold up your end of the bargain, you violate the covenant with God, that he's just going to keep doing his part like a fool? No. No. Far be it. It doesn't work that way. It didn't work in the old covenant. It's not going to work that way in the new covenant because God isn't anybody's fool. Anyway, I wound up spending way more time on this than we wound up spending the whole segment on it. So we wound up being good stuff. Good stuff. As you can tell, I get really these heresies that are so prominent now. I mean, it does. It gets me wound up. And you see a lot of it, you know. If I hear one more, if I have to read one more person posting up, oh, God will bless Israel. If he'll bless us, if we bless Israel. I just will run amok. It just makes me want to run amok, but I'm not. I'm not going to run amok. I'm just going to run amok here on Radio Albion. Well, I hope you enjoyed the running amok of the entire show, specifically the Christian specific segment. That's the main thing. I hope somebody gets something out. Hope you got something out of it. Dr. Johnson will be here tomorrow with Orthodox Nationalist. He'll wrap up our week on Thursday with his Daily Nationalist. So I hope you'll get a chance to check it all out. I appreciate you joining me this week. I hope I'll see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.